Our second case for this morning is McCaster v. Darden Restaurants. Mr. Sapolsky.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Jamie Sapolsky and I represent the plaintiff appellants. This is a vacation pay case brought under the Illinois Wage Payment and Collection Act. There are three issues before the court.
But can I ask you to start with a different issue? Do you have any notion how many people are in your class?
Yes, Your Honor. First, we have data from two exemplar.
I know you have the exemplar people. I'm looking for a gross number.
Yes. Well, we in open court, counsel for Darden indicated that there would be something on the order of 40,000 to 50,000 people. There's approximately 77 restaurants in Illinois, counting all the franchise operations. We actually, given the exemplar data, we actually calculated probably something in the vicinity of about 65,000.
All right. And do you, my second question is whether you have any notion of what a common claim would be. What I'm concerned about is whether you meet the $5 million aggregate jurisdictional amount for CAFA, because I can't imagine that you could do this as a non-CAFA suit.
Your Honor, we filed some briefs with Judge DeYurgian on that question. He asked specifically about that, and to be honest with you, I don't, off the top of my head, remember. I remember that we got over $5 million, but I don't remember exactly what that number was. Just to give you an idea, Your Honor, if we would reach that number, the $5 million, if we're talking about 50,000 people, we're talking about approximately $145 per person.
Okay, so if it's more than $100 a person, you're above the $5 million.
Well, again, yes, and again, we the way we calculate based on the exemplar data that actually the number is going to be higher than what was, and to be in fairness, the council was talking in rough numbers when the court asked for that amount. As I say, there's three issues: the denial of class certification, the associated ruling on our motion for our summary declaration, which the court struck, and also the question about the grant of summary judgment as to the part-time employee plaintiff Jennifer
Can
Clark.
Can I just start with that then, because it seemed to me that your opponents made a very good point when they said your logic actually prevents employers from distinguishing, at least for this vacation benefit, between part-time and full-time employees. And I can't find any reason to do that, and I can't find any Illinois case that has done that.
Your Honor, that's not exactly our position.
That's where you think this woman, who clearly was a part-time employee for 3 years after she comes back, obviously, should have been accruing this vacation pay. How can that be? She wasn't eligible.
Well, Your Honor, first let me say that there is a way that an employer can do that, and the way they do it is that they use, instead of a length of service vacation policy, they use a policy that rewards future performance.
Why should they have to do that? I mean, as an initial matter, why they can't simply say some people are part-time and the package of benefits they get, whether it's, you know, they don't get sick days maybe, or they don't get vacation time. When they don't work, they don't work. Maybe that's a heartless policy, I don't know, but you know, if it's not prohibited by Illinois law, then why isn't the district court correct?
It is prohibited by Illinois law, Judge. The Illinois Wage Payment and Collection Act, Section 5, states that at the time of separation, the employee is entitled to final compensation.
For what they've earned, though.
Compensation includes earned vacation. Earned vacation, Judge. And earned vacation is defined by the Illinois Department of Labor.
But it can't say, if the employer has a rule that says your earning rate is zero because you're part-time, over the course of a year you don't work enough hours, then...
Your Honor, there have been a number of cases, the number that we cited, beginning back with Golden Bear 30 years ago, that that put into place this IDOL regulation, and in many of these, including the most recent ones like Arez or Judge Manning's decision in Rosales, these are cases where there's an attempt to cap the amount of hours, or rather place a floor in the amount of hours, so that in 52 weeks the employer will say the employee has to have worked at least 1,500 hours.
Right. Those were length of service vacation benefits.
And these are length
of
service.
This is not length of service. This is part-time, full-time distinction. And just because the part-time status is negotiated or is determined by how much is worked over time on an average week doesn't make this a length of service vacation benefit.
It does, Judge, because either the benefit is awarded at the time employment starts and is forward-looking, or it's accrued as the person renders service. And these
they don't want to award it either time. They're distinguishing between part-time.
But, Judge, there's no difference between these cases where there's a 1,500-hour floor in the year, and if somebody reaches 1,499 in the year, they're not entitled to benefits. Now, the courts have said...
The Illinois courts have discussed that. It's hard for me to believe that an Illinois court would accept your very strong position that you can't not give vacation time to part-time people.
Your Honor, may I indulge with the indulgence of the court? I want to read what the Illinois Department of Labor regulations states.
Well, we know what they said. Actually, I'm going to ask you to do something different.
Yes, Your Honor. And by the way, Judge, that just to clarify, that only concerns this period forward from June 1st of 2008.
And yes. Right. No, I understand that. So I want to move to the Calderon summary, because reading your brief and reading your opponent's brief gave me the frustrating feeling of ships passing in the night, and I don't ever like that. So I need to know, your opponents say that she does more than simply summarize, take, you know, a column from different things and delete maybe some columns or whatever, just sort of highlight things, that she actually performs mathematical manipulations on them, she analyzes them, she groups together policies, and it seems to me quite clear that you can summarize, but by the time you take a data set and you start performing operations on it, then you have moved away from the realm of Rule 1006 and you're in the realm of expert testimony. So can you tell me what she did?
Yes, Your Honor. The defendants gave us, for the two exemplar restaurants, one was a Red Lobster, one was an Olive Garden, they gave us five spreadsheets. So this included employee data, paycheck data, vacation accrual prior to 2008, vacation accrual after 2008, and vacation payments. And what we did was to go through those documents, and I should add that in these data sets, there are data fields that identify, that are captioned such things as vacation hours accrued, vacation hours paid. This is the data that we got
so
from the defendant. It's their data.
That.
Right.
Yeah.
And what we did was, on line one is going to be somebody who's still working there, or is going to be somebody who was paid a vacation payment when they separated. On line two, there's going to be somebody who may have had hours accrued but wasn't paid. So we take number two and we put it in the separate spreadsheet. Number three, number four were paid out. Number five was not paid out. So number five and number two go in the separate spreadsheet.
That's so it's essentially a cut and paste, saying.
That's exactly. Now, we use the formulas of Excel to do that because, as we indicate, there's 300,000
sure.
lines of data. But we didn't manipulate. We didn't do anything other than find out, based on their data, who worked when they separated and whether they had vacation that was unpaid.
So you were just looking for a zero in the vacation payment at separation?
Yes, Your Honor. And in Ms. Calderon's declaration, there's an attachment 3 that covers the period prior to June 1st of 2008. That's an exemplar of the data that we actually got from. It's one page, but it shows the columns that I'm referring to. Attachment 4 of her declaration is the period after June 1st. There's some slight variations. They changed it around a little bit, but the captions are still basically the same. They're saying that the same kind of thing. Did vacation accrue? Was vacation paid? How much was paid? So those those are, that's pulled out of the data.
So is it your position, and the district court was concerned that there might be lots of different reasons why vacation wasn't paid.
Yes.
And so even looking at this Calderon declaration, as I understand his opinion anyway, he seemed to be thinking, well, you know, in some cases maybe this was for a completely uncontestable reason, and in other instances maybe there is a problem with the wage payment law, but there's too much variation to justify a finding of common question or predominance, either one.
Well, on the issue of what the court was referred to as a variety of reasons, that the court, I think, addressed primarily in typicality, and that is does not really have a basis in evidence, in the record. It's not so clear, Judge, before this court, but from the briefing below and before Judge Dyergian, the basis of that claim that there were a variety of reasons why a separating employee would not be paid vacation pay stemmed from a declaration from a senior director of payroll for Darden. The man's name is Randy Babbitt, and Mr. Babbitt submitted a declaration in which he says that there were sometimes reasons that the general manager of the restaurant could use to depart from the policy. But that was a statement that was not supported in any way, and the only term that Mr. Babbitt referred to in his declaration was one, and that was the date of separation. And what the example was in his declaration was, he said, if an employee is also a student, and that person may be working summers, school vacations, but in the school term, that person would not be working. In that event, the manager might carry that person in a category or status of leave of absence as opposed to terminated. There's nothing, no other comments, and of course, no other terms that were used in Mr. Babbitt's declaration. And the fact that they may manipulate the date of separation has nothing whatever to do with the analysis of class certification. What we're talking about is a class of separated employees. And
so you don't care when they were separated, is what you're saying.
You know, when it comes to damages, that's going to be an issue. But for purposes of class certification, it doesn't matter. We've got this data for two restaurants. In that period, during the limitations period, approximately 1,794 individuals separated. And of those, about 1,223 we found to have separated without a vacation payment. I see my time's up. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Mottman.
Morning, Your Honors. Gerald Mottman on behalf of defendant. We respectfully submit there are three essential reasons why this court should affirm the district court's decision and reject plaintiff's appeal. With respect to the first two categories, the Calderon declaration and the denial of class certification, of course, an abuse of discretion standard applies, and we believe the record before the court demonstrates that the court recognized the issues.
But could you clarify, because if the only thing that Ms. Calderon did was literally take lines, you know, lines and columns from your five Excel spreadsheets and move them over to a different Excel spreadsheet without changing the numbers, without adding, multiplying, doing anything, then it's hard for me to see it as anything but a summary. Now, it may not matter. The district court said, even if this is fine, I would still come to the same conclusion. But focusing on this point, that's the beauty of Excel, basically. You can move things around and choose certain columns or choose certain, you know, search for zero in column five or whatever you do.
Yes, Your Honor. At page five of the district court's opinion, there was a finding that Ms. Calderon did more than simply compile a summary.
But I'm asking you to explain that, because I have just heard from Mr. Sapolsky that the district court was mistaken about that.
Well, I think
what did she do other than copy columns or lines?
I think that paragraphs 6, 7, 10, and 11 of her declaration demonstrate that she did more than simply make a summary. She manipulated data.
Tell me what they said.
In paragraph 6, based on some formula, she didn't disclose the formula. She opined on an ultimate issue and made conclusions in paragraph 7 with respect to eligibility. In paragraph,
I'm looking. Do we have her declaration?
And in paragraph 11, she made a statement with respect to Clark's hours that was inaccurate and in essence, an opinion and an ultimate issue. And so this case, or the declaration at issue, was more like what we cite the Davis and Cox case out of the Ninth Circuit.
Well, this is a question of fact that we have. I suppose we have to sit there and wade through this declaration.
Right. We cited, and the court was aware of, the Dish Network case that said compilations of data must be without opinions. The district court found that this declaration of plaintiff's paralegal included.
All right, so paragraph 6, she says, using the vacation accrual prior 2008 produced, she figures out the last pay end date. And you, I take it, take issue with the formula she uses to sum. I mean, that's just, I mean, an Excel formula.
Well,
like
she doesn't say that it's an Excel formula. She says it's a formula, doesn't explain how she did it, and then
total
she makes
number
those
of hours paid starting 3 pay periods into the anniversary period.
So we think that this, and we think the district court was correct that, to say that this summary was something that was a summary plus. It was plus opinions, included some assumptions, and it crossed the line. But as Your Honor pointed out at page 6, the district court said it wouldn't matter anyway, because
right,
even that information, if added to the record, wouldn't allow the plaintiffs to certify their case. On that particular issue, the denial of certification, we contend the district court had 5 solid reasons upon which to deny that motion. And in terms of the facts at issue in paragraph 9 of the stipulation, there was a very important sentence that said that the policies varied by brand and varied by time period.
But did they vary? Here we have, again, the parties not really joining issue. If they vary in material ways, that's important. If they vary because, one restaurant requires 3,000 hours, in a year, and somebody else requires 1,500 hours in a year, I don't know why that would have anything to do with payment of vacation.
We contend they varied in significant factors, because one person couldn't get on the stand and tell their story, and it would transpose to everyone else.
But did you specify?
Mr. Babbitt's declaration at paragraphs 16 and 17, what counsel had referred to, the director of payroll services at Darden, said that there were different ways that managers implemented the different policies.
Well, obviously, and you're trying to map on Walmart here, I understand that, but if the only thing is your date of separation included a certain amount of time when you were on leave of absence and somebody else's date of separation was effective immediately, if all we care about is that they were separated, that's a difference, but it's not a material difference. So did the managers have the authority to create vacation policies without Darden's supervision?
There weren't. I think you're referring to the kind of guidelines or the McReynolds kind of area about
restrained. Well, I'm referring to what did Darden really let each manager say, well, in your restaurant, you can pay vacation benefits based on, this many hours, and somebody else can say, no, well, I've decided my Olive Garden is going to work better if I give vacation pay to the part-time people, and somebody else said, if it's that level of discretion, then you do look like Walmart.
Well,
but
I believe
it's not.
The record was unrebutted. Mr. Bobbitt's deposition was not taken. In paragraph 16 and 17, he referred to that variation and wide discretion.
But he never says what it's about, other than this leave of absence business.
He provided an example, and it showed that variation, in the district court, we believe, did not abuse its discretion in viewing that fact, which was unrebutted, as a demonstration that for commonality purposes, there wasn't a common glue, and for predominance purposes, there had to be that individualized inquiry. And I think proof of that is what happened on summary judgment.
the drill down.
What about your stipulation that the policies are applied substantially similarly across all Illinois locations and the terms do not actually vary in any material way?
And that stipulation, we contend, has to be juxtaposed against the statement in paragraph 9 about the variation by brand and by time period. That was a lawyer negotiated stipulation to avoid this.
You can't walk away from it by calling it.
And nor can plaintiffs walk away from paragraph 9 of that stipulation that talks about the variation, and the district court did not abuse its discretion in viewing that as demonstrating that the commonality required to certify a class was lacking, and certainly the predominant standard would be even higher than the commonality requirement, and there were too many individual issues which were shown by the court's analysis of Clark's pay and her eligibility or ineligibility for that pay, and how difficult it would be to demonstrate that across a class starting in 2003.
Simple arithmetic. I mean, I know lawyers are terrible at math, but, you know, it seems to me that it's all right there in the spreadsheets that you gave them.
But there's sufficient variation based on the district court's...
At the policy level about your... length of
service
vacation policy.
There's not one uniform policy in the
court. But they're all
found.
Length of service, right? You don't have any vacation policies.
Correct.
Okay, so
they're
of common.
The same ilk, but they're different, and
but
there is a
why
big
isn't that
change.
Just damages? If that ilk isn't being done the right way, why isn't that just a simple ruling? You're not giving people prorated vacation, whatever the amount may be, and then just running the numbers through a formula.
Because there's, in the middle of the class period, a huge change in June of 2008.
And they separate that out,
too. Well, plaintiffs never asked for subclasses or to divide it in a certain way. They had this grand class from 2003 to the date of trial. They rose and fall on their case theory. And likewise, the evidence before the court showed that variation by brand and by restaurant, and that the policies were not uniform, that they were varied by brand and restaurant. On the final point on the motion for summary judgment, we believe the district court properly recognized that he was being asked to identify a cause of action in Illinois or under Illinois law that no state court had ever recognized, and he fortified his conclusions with the statement that there were good public policy reasons why courts should not do so. Here it was undisputed that the person was a part-time employee, never was qualified for these vacation pay, and that the plaintiff's case theory about imposing mandatory vacation pay was something inconsistent with the statute. For those reasons, Your Honor, we suggest that the court should affirm the decision below. Thank
you. Do you have a position on the CAFA jurisdictional issue?
I was not present in court, and I was not party to those discussions, but I believe that the calculations on the class-wide basis did get the parties over the $5 million.
Well, the Calderon Declaration, and I understand it was struck, but it extrapolated from the data some 700 or so employees May 2008 change in policy, and then I think it's 500 or 400 something, 500 and some.
Yeah,
post the change in policy.
That's correct, Your Honor.
I mean, does that get us over the threshold if we're dealing with those numbers?
Well, I don't think that's in the record, or it could be addressed in a Rule 28J. I wasn't present in court that Mr. Sapolsky had referred to at that time.
So we need to extrapolate from those numbers. Those are just the two restaurants, and I understand that the argument is that by the time you have all of Illinois, you get above it. I'm not even sure that you get above it if the class were limited to the pre-2008 people, because that might eliminate a substantial number of people. But we'll certainly take a look at it, see what was... I assume the record contains whatever was given to the district court.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Anything further, Mr. Sapolsky?
Just a few points, Sean.
The stipulation, setting aside the question about the Calderon declaration, the stipulation in paragraphs 10 and 11 does point to, as the court pointed out, defendant agreed that the material terms of the agreements, the vacation policies both before and after June 1st of 2008, were materially the same for all across the different concepts, Red Lobster, Olive Garden, and others.
But this is an uncertified class, and if we were to agree with the district court about Clark's individual case, then we have no class representative for the post-2008 people, and it seems to me that just goes down the drain at that point.
No, I don't think so, Your Honor, because if the court is inclined to agree with Judge Dierigen's decision on the summary judgment, then the part-time people fall away from the post-June 11, 2008. But what remains are the full-time people throughout the whole limitations period, which would include the post-June 1st time as well.
And for that you have McAllister? He's...
McAllister, Your Honor,
McAllister,
yes.
McAllister, sorry.
Yes.
McAllister, yeah.
And, Your Honor, just one other point. I mean, again, I commend to the court that attachments 3 and 4, and these are the documents that we got, you know, the raw data, so to speak, from the defendants, and there are captions there which read vacation accrual, vacation hours available, vacation hours paid. This is for the pre-08 stuff, but the post-08 stuff does similar types of things, similar point headings.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks to both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.